Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Tens of thousands of US tourists from Kansas and Iowa in Dublin this weekend. Buckets of them. You'll see them all over the shop with their jerseys for the American football match at the Aviva Stadium tomorrow. A lot of razzmatazz, I can tell you. Gary, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Cormac. How are you?
It's great, isn't it?
I would beg to differ. I would beg to differ.
Why?
Why? Take a look at our climate carbon reduction targets and how little progress we're making towards it. We are inviting 30, 40,000 lovely American folks over to Ireland. So the two American teams can play a game of American football in Dublin. We have climate targets for 2030. We are going to miss them. And as each day passes by, we're going to miss them by more. And the penalty for missing them is 26 billion euro. Mm. And what are we doing? We're encouraging a bunch of American footballers and fans to come over to Ireland and to party and have the crack. While we are going in the opposite direction. I heard an analogy by a climate scientist.
Yeah.
We're in Maynooth. We need to be in Galway in 20 minutes, and we're accelerating in the wrong direction.
Yeah, but it's good for tourism, Gary.
It is good for tourism, and it's good for jobs and all that. And my point here, Cormac, and it's a fair point you make, is that all of us are going to have to make sacrifices. All of us are going to have to change our way of life. I try to do some of this myself. We've gone from a two-car family to a one-car family. We're trying to go much more veggie. I'm planting my own stuff. I plant a bunch of trees and I give them away. And it's going to hurt. But the alternative is no future for our children and our grandchildren.
I know, and you make a fair point. And I can't argue with the climate science. Nobody's going to argue with that. But in terms of tourism, these guys being... They bring big business, Gary. And you try telling the tour guide in Dublin City or the cafe owner or the hotel worker that we don't want these people in from the Kansas State Wildcats and the Iowa State Cyclones.
I'm sure they're wonderful folks and they'll spend lots of money and they'll drink lots of overpriced pints and Temple Bar and all the rest of it. And that's fine. But, you know, there's the cost of, you know, what Dublin would lose to this event not taking place. And then there's the cost of the earth. Are we going to cost ourselves and our children in the future? And all of us, no matter what we're doing, will find a reason to say, well, it's just this, it's just that, and I'm not really having a huge impact. And as I mentioned to your researcher, there are 8 billion people on the planet. If 8 billion people are having a negative, a small negative impact on the planet, that's one big negative impact.
Well, that's for sure. But in fairness, Gary, you can't blame the Kansas State Wildcats and the Iowa State Cyclones and all their fans and their teams for our climate failures in Ireland, can you?
No, but I mean, we have to, as a nation, and as I understand it, this event is sponsored, supported by Aer Lingus. We, as a nation, have to step up and start to meet our legally binding obligations to climate, to reducing carbon emissions, to offsetting climate change. We have to do that as a nation.
And how we do that as a nation. You don't think it should be sponsored by Aer Lingus?
Certainly not. I mean, I know Aer Lingus promote tourism, promote flight and all the rest of it, and that's what they do. You know, go back a couple of years, Bordemona were harvesting turf. They had to change their whole raison d'etre. Yeah. They had to change their whole business model. And in fairness to them, they did. And the onus is on every individual, every company, I'm sure RTE are doing it, every corporation, every charity, every public body to do something.
But Aer Lingus' business is to bring more and more people, fill those planes with people. I mean, what harm if they're from Kansas or Iowa?
Well, they have to find, Aer Lingus have to find ways of shouldering their responsibilities to the climate and to humanity. I mean, my point on that, and it's similar to the European rugby final, you could have Munster and Leinster in the final next year, and the final might be in Toulouse. Now, tell me how that makes sense. in terms of unnecessary flights around the country. And
I'll give you an example, Cormac.
I worked for several charitable organisations, worked in Africa and Asia. The last one I did was a trip down to Tanzania and Uganda, and the flight company, they provided you with your carbon footprint. My flight alone was 7 tons of CO2. My flight alone. I went back to the organisation. We have got to change our business model. We cannot be doing this, because it was a regular thing of people flying overseas to development projects in Asia and Africa. And in fairness, the organisation took that on board and said, yeah, we're going to have to look at our model.
I had a right old Barney with Michael O'Leary from Ryanair on Drive Time recently about about aviation pollution. And his point to me was that it's far cleaner to travel by air, by flight, than it used to be. And they're making great strides. But my question to you is this. I just wonder, and don't be offended by this question now, Gary. Promise me.
Mm-hmm. No, promise you.
You're not anti-American football, are you? Do you hate the sight of American football and the whole razzmatazz?
No. I love the crack. I mean, I think with all the interruptions and the breaks and all the rest of it, it's not as exciting as rugby. But it's great. And if it happens to be on telly some night, I'm watching it. I may watch 5 minutes of it. Nothing against the decent Americans you see over here. I've nothing against their sport. I just think it's bonkers. I mean,
and it's not anti-Trumpism.
Absolutely not. It's just, you know, it'd be like kicking off, you know, Dublin versus Meath and playing it in Chicago. Why would that make any sense in terms of trying to do something? I mean, I'm trying to limit our travel. For example, I live 1.2 miles from my local shop.
Yeah.
I've now said, right, I'm not driving to it. I'll take out the bike. I'm 64 years of age. I creak and I have bones and arthritis and others. But I'm bloody well not going to drive 1.2 miles. I'm going to get the bike and go down and organise myself a bit better.
Well, that's another little contribution.
Well done.
Yeah. Well, I must say, I love hearing those stories. But you can't get away from the fact that we are a small island nation. One of the biggest sectors we have in terms of driving the economy here and driving jobs is tourism. And the only way to get on this island efficiently is by plane. I mean, you can't get away from that fact, can you?
We're a small island nation, absolutely. There are lots of small island nations in the South Pacific and all around the world, but the sea level is rising because of the way we're living our lives. And those people are being forced off their land, because people in small island nations like Ireland are partying and having the crack and walking along a beach, looking at the seashells and ignoring the now audible sound of the climate tsunami that's heading towards the beach.
So you haven't gone on holidays overseas for years then, have you?
Not for a couple of years. I went a couple of years back. We had a holiday in Salerno in Italy. But that's a conscious decision. We were invited to a friend's wedding in the south of France.
And did you feel guilty? Did you feel guilty traveling?
No, I didn't. And I actually said to them, I said, look, wish you all the best. And, we're not going to make that journey.
Okay. And you say you're a rugby man. What about the Lions tour in the Southern Hemisphere?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's us going to play Australia in Australia, going to play the All Blacks in New Zealand. There's a logic to, every organisation is going to have to look at its own track record and carbon footprint. There's a logic to doing that.
Isn't it the same logic?
If you're going to play against Australia, you're either going to play them in Australia or in Ireland. So there's a logic to going down there.
Unless you meet halfway.
There's no logic.
Yeah.
you could do that. But.
Yeah. No, I understand. So your objection really is to the fact that this could be played in Kansas or it could be played in Iowa and it'd be far greener.
Yeah.
But you see, their business model is to expand the game. They want to expand the reach of American football. And they see the lucrative Irish-American links. And in fairness, we are interested in all things American in this country, aren't we?
I suppose we are. But I don't see too many American football teams cropping up around County Kildare where I live.
Do you not?
No.
They're here, you know.
They're here, are they? Okay.
Well, there are American football teams. I think there's an American Football League in Ireland, if I'm not mistaken.
Is there? Okay. News to me, but fair enough. But again, it's back to the same point, Cormac. You know, if I worked in the paint business before, I worked for charities before, I worked in banking before. Mm-hmm. Everyone has to look at their models. Everyone has to look at projects they're undertaking. And in my view now, if you're undertaking a project, written into the project plan needs to be environmental impact. And if it's negative, well, then you have to have a serious look at the project,
Gary,
and maybe start again.
Gary, can I tell you this? Faster than a short-haul flight. We're not even 10 minutes on the air and they're on to us. Aer Lingus has made given us a statement. Do you want to hear some of what they say? They say Aer Lingus, as part of the IAG group, has made a contribution to projects that help reduce some of the carbon impact of the event on behalf of Kansas State University and Iowa State University, who are travelling to the 2025 Aer Lingus College Football Classic. And they say Aer Lingus is committed to power 10% of its flights using sustainable aviation fuel by 2030, which is you're not convinced, Gary.
Absolutely not, and the more I use them, I would suspect. Organisations like Aer Lingus have highly paid PR specialists, and always have a line like this throughout. End of the day, aviation is not good for the environment, and you know anybody can make a contribution to a small initiative that is going to do something for climate change, while ignoring the big impact of what they do.
It is regulated. And we have laws, and they're pointing that out as well. In from the end zone, Gary. Stay with me. Michael is coming from left of field. Michael, you're very welcome to the program.
How are you doing?
Not too bad. Do you agree with Gary?
Well, he's 100% right, but the argument he's making is he is against all tourism that comes in on flights.
How do you make that out?
He's against all tourism that comes in on flights. He's against all foreign tourism.
Didn't say that, Michael. If an American person wants to come here and do a holiday, tour, and if they've ancestral and all the rest of it, that's okay. The difference here, the American folks who want to see this match is two American teams. They can do it in America.
Michael.
Tourism is frivolous by any means. So he's against people flying in to watch a match, but it's okay for people to come on tour, on a touring holiday.
You think this is vital, do you, Michael, this game?
No, it's his argument is that anything flying for unnecessary reasons is bad, and tourism by its nature is unnecessary.
Tell us why this is helpful. You're in tourism, are you?
No.
Are you
my family would be would have coaches.
Okay. So and you're from the kingdom, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, and tourism is huge, as we know. If you listen to some Kerry voices, the kingdom is the capital of the world when it comes to tourism, and for good reason they make that argument as well. But I mean, the point I think Gary is making, Michael, and isn't it a fair one, that this game could have been played in America. And it'd be for the environment, it'd be far better.
So at that rate, people who are touring Ireland could possibly go touring in the States rather than in Ireland.
That's a fair point, Gary.
Yeah, absolutely. And Michael, look, my overall point here is that all of us need to reflect. We're not being led well by government policy. Government policy is taking us away from hitting our targets by our climate but CO2 emission targets by 2030. So we're having to, like in most things, people have to take the initiative, and every one of us has to look hard and kind of say, are we going to go to Ireland this year, considering the climate. I've just recently become a grandfather, and I'm looking at my beautiful little granddaughter and thinking, I have a responsibility to her future, and I'm going to have to change my behaviour. And I'd love to go to lots of places in America, and I did before, but my conscience is at me about doing it again. And let's try and go somewhere more local. Let's take a ferry. Let's find a way of making it, and just keep trying to, as I say again, if we all make some little changes, Well, that's 8 billion changes across the planet.
Yeah.
If we all keep ignoring it, that's 8 billion actions that
damage. Hang on, Gary. You see, I come back to the point that Michael, his family is involved in tourism. So many people in the country, right across the country, are employed in jobs and tourism. Is it not good for the image of Ireland to have, I think there's 40,000 people from Iowa and Kansas here, and they might normally be here. They'll bring back stories about Ireland, and you'll have far more people touring in Ireland. Is that not a good thing?
And the best of luck to Michael been involved in tourism here, and what a fantastic country you have, what a great summer we've had. You go out to Dublin
Airport.
Would
it be better if there was no tourism, wouldn't it?
No. Listen to me, Michael. What I'm saying to you here is that if we go out to Dublin Airport and we look at the airport's chock-a-block that you can't get parking, so there are so many Irish people heading off to the Wild Blue Yonder all the time. I think those people.
Yeah, but it'd be better if there was absolutely no tourism coming into Ireland, wouldn't it?
No, from an environmental point of view.
You're being disingenuous.
No, what I'm saying to you is if all those Irish people who go overseas invested in your family business and stayed at home a bit more and with more offerings at home, you know, then we would be addressing our climate issues. Instead of going the opposite direction, we're trying to get permission.
Actually, you have no right to speak because you are saying that you have one car now and that you have a house with a garden. I mean, that's not a green way to live. If you're to live in a green way, you should be living in an apartment with no cars.
Well, I've gone from two cars to one, so if halved our car.
But you could do something more, couldn't you? I mean, that's your argument to everyone else. Your argument that we can do more, that we should accept the hurt, but you're not accepting the hurt.
Consumption of fossil fuels is hardwired into our way of living. Everything we do, you know, our cars, our houses. Everything we do is powered by fossil fuels, ultimately. And that's not going to change overnight. But if we can all start doing a little bit, I mean, like last year, we took a loan out to put on, solar panels.
And I suppose everyone...
What was the carbon involved in that?
But everyone can do what they can, I suppose. Caoimhe, stay with me, Michael, Gary. Caoimhe, good afternoon.
Hi there, how are you? Yeah, Caoimhe here from Pearse Cavanagh Coaches in Urlingford. I'm delighted that they're here in Ireland. We have American passengers visiting Ireland for this particular event that wouldn't have come otherwise. And, for example, they went to Man O' War pub last Sunday when they arrived. Mm-hmm. So we had a load of people in there in an Irish pub having breakfast. They went up to Belfast, they did the city tour, they went to the Giant's Causeway, they've gone to Titanic. They've gone to another pub in Belfast for dinner. They've done the Ulster American Folk Park. They visit Beleek Pottery. Then they went over to Donegal and then they dropped down into Sligo and they visited Kylemore Abbey, Celtic Crystal. They did a walking tour of Galway with Brian Nolan. Yeah. They went to Rathbone Farm and today they're in Clonmacnoise.
My God, I'm
exhausted. Tonight,
I'm exhausted.
They're
give them oxygen,
Guinness,
I say.
And then absolutely. But then they have a full day in Dublin city centre to visit every bar, every restaurant they want to shop in whatever shop and spend their tourism.
Caoimhe, I think you want
city.
To kill them off with all that itinerary.
No.
How much carbon emission is that though?
It's not just about, it's a regular coach tour. And if you think about it, we have two coaches travelling in convoy. Mm. You've got one coach has the same emissions as six cars. So we've 40 people on each. So, I mean, we're actually saving emissions by moving them in the most clean and efficient manner.
Point taken,
so
well made, actually.
So these people are going to come either.
Point taken, well made, Caoimhe.
They were going to come anyway.
And they're spending an awful lot of shekels, I would say, Caoimhe.
Yeah, they're spending their money in our country, and we need every tourism dollar that comes in. So I think it's a wonderful thing to embrace. But please remember, this football is only one day. It's only one event in their whole programme that they're coming to Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
It's the star attraction of it, but it is not the only thing that they're seeing. They're spending so much money in our country promoting tourism, which is a vital part in the cog of the wheel of our economy.
So you don't understand Gary's point at all then, do you? When he says the American College Football Classic, sponsored by Aer Lingus, should not be hosted here at the Aviva Stadium tomorrow at all because we are going to miss our climate targets, he says, and we'll be fined €26 billion potentially.
Yeah, well, that's not down to the football this month or the NFL football next month. I think it's something we should embrace and we should enjoy.
Gary.
Well, the lot of, and Caoimhe spoke brilliantly there and excellently, but, you know, the comment at the end, well, that's not down to this match, right? Mm-hmm. And that is the false belief we have, that this thing I'm doing and that thing I'm doing and the other thing, it's only a tiny little impact on the overall scheme of things. And the big polluters, the Indians and the Chinese and all the rest of it, they're not doing it, blah-de-blah. And excuse. But, you know, I absolutely take on board what people were saying and how the whole tourist industry is structured. What I'm saying is we all have to have a hard look at what we do in our personal lives and our professional lives and find some ways of cutting back on this thing. And this, to me, just stood out as 40,000 people flying across the Atlantic. You know, my one trip, my last trip to Africa, 6 tons of carbon I generated. So I'm not doing that again. And this is 40,000. So get 40,000 multiplied by 6. Do the math. Okay. That's the number of tons.
Okay, Michael, final word to you.
So that's the answer. Stop people flying altogether.
Okay. Look, I'd love to know what people think. If hosting at the Aviva Stadium tomorrow, the Kansas City Wildcats and the Iowa State Cyclones. By the way, if the supporters are listening, it's easy to get in touch. liveline@rte.ie to get your stake in. But maybe you're busy, too busy touring the country. Gary, thank you. Michael, thank you. Kiva, thank you.
And Cormac, I just hope Michael is taking good care of the Sam Maguire, because the Dubs want us back next year.
That's a whole other liveline, I can tell you. Come back at the start of next season. Thank you all very much indeed. I want your help now, Liveline listeners. 51551 0818 715 815, because we have a mystery on our hands. It's the mystery of the lost photos. Maura, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Philip. How are you?
It's Cormac here, but I'm not too bad.
Sorry, Cormac.
No, you're okay.
Cormac.
I can assure you that Philip is very well as well. The lost photos, it's a bit of a mystery. Where did you find them?
So I found them between the RDS and Simmons Court on Sunday, the last day of the horror show. There was a little area set up where there was a few food stalls. There was Gorilla and Eddie Rockets, and they were just, there's benches set up for people to sit down and eat, and they were just on the ground there, and my little boy Tom came across them and I shoved them into my handbag, and they were there for a couple of weeks and I totally forgot about them. Yeah. And then when I started looking at them, I thought they're probably precious to somebody, so I thought we'd try and reunite them if we could.
Yeah, and I've just seen a photo of the photos, so to speak. So it's a set of photos, isn't it? Describe them. So sorry, so you're going back a couple of weeks now with the horror show when they were lost. So we're trying to find the owner of these. It's a set of photos, and I know they look extremely of huge sentimental value. If my family lost these, I'd be heartbroken, I must say. Can you describe them or give the owner any clue as to what they are?
Yeah, so there's two different photos. So one is one from 1918. It's a professional photo, and there's three army officers, or they're in British Army. I presume it's British Army anyway.
Yeah.
And there's three young men standing together for the professional photo. And then the second photo is a good bit later. It's 1961. And it's also three men standing. And it's not a professional photo now. It's just a photograph that somebody would have taken. And it's also three men in this photograph as well. And they're standing on a bridge. It's a more casual photo than the first one taken in 1918.
And is there any other clue on the photos, front or back or anything else that might jog memories?
So on one of them, there is a name. It's not very distinct, but there's a townland or an address in Castlereagh, County Roscommon.
Mm-hmm. Roscommon.
Yeah, okay. In Roscommon. And the second one, the second one doesn't. It does have something written on the back of it, but nothing, no place or anything that.
So it's very hard to know. You see, the problem here is, it's not easily identifiable if you're the owner and you're listening and you've lost a set of photos of huge sentimental value, then you'll know. But in terms of jogging other people to, this is the mystery of the lost set of photos. At the RDS, you say, a couple of weeks ago during the horse show, where were they on the ground? Were they behind a pole or anything?
No, just right. It was there was wooden benches set up for people to sit down and have, you know, eat their food that they could get in these food trucks, and they were just lying on the ground, just in between, as if maybe they'd just fallen out of someone's jacket. Maybe it was quite a warm day. Maybe someone had taken off a jacket and they'd slipped out of the pocket or something like that. And they were just right on top of each other, just the two photos. So it was, you know, it was
And
so
you knew immediately, Maura, that these are valuable to whoever lost them.
Well, they're just, you know, they're so old. I mean, 107-year-old photographs. Someone has taken care of this for a long time. It's in really good condition.
Yeah.
You know, so you just, you wonder, I'd hate if somebody was looking for it and they didn't try and reunite them.
They're over 100 years old, the 1918 photo anyway. Roscommon is a big clue. If you know of anyone who's lost photos, if they've told you, if they're heartbroken, please, please, please spread the word. And if the owner is listening, 51551, they could be yours. They could be yours. And let's hope that we can do a liveline trick in this, Maura, and find the owner. Maura Boyle, thank you very much indeed. We'll be back with wedding planning after this.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Tesco Club Card gives you the power to more. Serve up something special with our finest certified Irish Angus Cowboy Steak with Memphis-inspired barbecue seasoning. Now half price at €7.50. And pair perfectly with our La Brunade Merlot. Now half price, just €9. Get more from your shop with your Tesco Club Card or app. Shop in-store or online. Tesco. Every little helps. Available in most stores. Prices vary in Express. Enjoy alcohol responsibly.
Famine has been declared in Gaza. Starving parents watch their starving children get weaker and weaker with every day. UNICEF is rushing food to hungry children in Gaza, but much more is needed. Please visit unicef.ie and help save a child's life today. Thank you.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
It's a beautiful night. We're looking for something dumb to do. Hey, baby, I think I want to marry you.
Is it the lucky Rebecca, Rebecca, the excitement is building. The big day is approaching. You've got everything organized, have you? You're very welcome.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm loving your intro music there. It's very impactful.
Good. Look, it's so stress-free, isn't it, organising a wedding?
Oh, now, you know, I think you're being a little bit sarcastic there with me, are you?
Is it true? You know, is it true, Rebecca? Because we're being told, 51551, we're being told that planning a wedding in Ireland in 2025 is more expensive and more stressful than it was ever before. Is that true?
Yeah, like, to be honest, I would totally agree with that statement. So my sister got married in 2022. It was in the middle of COVID, and we all thought, wow, that's stressful enough. But I think, to be honest, things have really amplified since then. So I'm getting married in October, and I'm finding myself very stressed out. I'm at one of these stages. They say you go through a few. There's naivety, determination, overconfidence, and decision fatigue before reaching calm acceptance. I'm definitely at decision fatigue right now.
So hopefully you'll reach acceptance. So you're getting married in October. So tell me, what's stressing you out, Rebecca?
Yeah, so I wrote about this in a piece in The Independent today. I think what's stressing me out most is unrealistic expectations. So there's this whole Insta dream idea. So ever since I got engaged back in December, I've been bombarded with ads about, you know, dresses, makeup, brochures for venues. It becomes a little bit overwhelming. So meeting those Insta-dream expectations is huge at the moment.
Okay.
And then also the need to book vendors at speed. So I had no idea I was definitely in the naivety stage when I started booking my vendors, because a lot of them back in January were already full up for the whole year.
Get away. They were not.
Yep. Were they? They were. So I'm not joking.
No, but I can't believe it. So you're booking in January. I would have thought ample time for any time of the year. So you're getting married in October. So do you have a venue?
I do indeed. Okay, and it's met all of our requirements, yeah.
Good. And so what else do you have? Do you have the dress?
Yes. So the dress was an interesting one. And I definitely tie this into a huge point in terms of rising costs when it comes to weddings. The cost of things has increased hugely since my sister was planning hers back in 2022. Mm-hmm. I think the dress was one of the main points of contention. So I went to try on a few dresses. I was actually on Say Yes to the Dress years ago with my younger sister, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
She tried on 71 dresses. So I decided I wasn't going to do that. I went to two bridal stores and I said, that's the one, let's go. And I was in the naivety stage because I never asked about the price of the dress before trying it on.
Oh, Rebecca.
So of course, yes, you try it on, you love it, and then you realise, oops, it's about €800 over budget. What am I going to do?
And what did you do?
But it's too late at that stage. Oh. I decided it was a tomorrow problem.
Rebecca, I love your attitude, I must say. So the dress goes into the bag anyway, €800 over budget. No harm. We'll deal with that tomorrow. You've got the venue. You've got the dress. Have you got a band?
I have a band. And luckily, it was someone I knew who's the lead singer of the band. So I booked them months in advance. But they were actually booked up for a gig already. So they managed to move that for me, despite me making the inquiry in January for an October wedding. Mm. They were fully booked, so I was very, very fortunate to get one.
I think you're making great progress here in terms of arrangements and preparation. What about makeup and hair and photographer and so on?
Oh, yes. So all of these elements are things that social media tells you to sort out as soon as you get engaged. So you're bombarded with the ads for the venue, and then following that... ironically, Instagram seems to know that you've booked your venue. I don't know, does your phone listen to you or not? But ads for makeup artists, hairstylists, photographers, videographers, it's endless. But they're the things you need to book straight away in addition to the band.
Yeah.
Just to relieve pressure a bit.
My goodness.
Once you get the venue, you're okay.
Yeah, it's going to be a great day, I know. I must say, based on how you're describing it, it is going to be fantastic. But there is an awful lot of pressure. 51551, because I'd love to know, if you're planning your wedding today in Ireland, if you're feeling the same pressure that Rebecca is feeling. You said something very interesting, Rebecca, though. Social media tells you to book these things. I mean, that can't be right.
Yes. Oh, ads have got very clever these days. It's something to do with algorithms through Google search. So, yeah, anything you type in. If you have any questions about weddings, your phone is recording that. And then a lot of marketers know how to target you with the relevant advertising. So it's been interesting. I think another thing that's actually really surprised me about the whole wedding planning process in this day and age is the impact inflation has had. It's crazy. So I must have emailed every venue in Ireland that hosts weddings, and the difference in prices between 2025 and 2026 was €20 to €30 per head per package. Now,
So the price is going up €30 per head. Is that what you mean? No.
€20 to €30 per head increase in prices between this year and next year in most of the venues I would have emailed.
That can't be right.
I couldn't believe it.
That can't be right. Because that could be thousands based on the number of people going to your wedding.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So that's something me and my other half had to factor into consideration. So we have 140 people. If you multiply that by 30, that's an extra 4,200 just to get married next year.
Have you got that right now? Because you're getting the same, let's say, the same hotel, the same service. So how could it be thousands more expensive just in the space of 8 months?
Yeah, so I mean, I queried this with a few venues and they said it was down to inflation. What I also did was I spoke to a friend of mine who's a financial advisor, and he said, look, obviously the hotels and restaurants are going through a tough time at the moment. Like, let's not deny they are. But I think there is an element of, you know, let's make as much as we can out of inflation at the moment.
But in fairness to them, and you are being fair, food inflation, for example, is more expensive or growing faster than average inflation. So, and they're in the food business, especially when it comes to weddings and so on. But that is a huge expense for you. I do understand the expense. So what have you done about that?
Yeah, so what we did was we kind of fast-tracked the wedding a little bit. My other half was saying, why don't we wait until February 2026? That all sounded very attractive until we realised we had 140 guests. So, to be honest, by making a wedding happen in the space of 10 months to get it over the line this year, it has saved us a lot of money, but it's also had a huge impact in terms of trying to get everything done on time and trying to get the vendors that we really wanted.
So there's a pressure there. I mean, that is clever, but you're essentially bringing your wedding forward because of cost. Talk to me about this. So this is the other thing, and anyone who's been to a wedding will have seen this or noticed it. Content creators at weddings now. Do you have one?
Oh, don't get me started. So I was at a wedding a few months ago. It was something I was considering as opposed to a videographer. But when I saw a social content creator in action, I just thought, you know what, that's far too invasive for my liking. So the couple were at the top at the altar saying, I do. And there was a social media content creator doing 360s around the couple with her phone in their faces. And it was just, it was something else. And even at the after party, for example, this lady was going around with her phone, like, no disregard to social media content creators. It's a huge industry, lots of money in it. I could see why people do it. But at my wedding, it certainly wasn't something that I was interested in. Like, I'm not about the likes. I'm about the marriage now, to be honest.
Really? That's a good line, I must say. I'm not about the likes. I'm about the marriage. Somebody told me as well that they were at a wedding and they didn't realise until well into the meal that there was a microphone on every single table at the wedding for the social media.
Oh, gosh. For social media. Now, that is dangerous.
Isn't that?
Not a chance.
Red or white? Well, wait till I tell you about that one over there. That's the way I tell you. It is dangerous. Stay with me, Rebecca. Aisling, you're very welcome to the programme.
Hi, Cosmo, how are you?
Not too bad at all. You're planning a wedding, aren't you, at the moment? Or you're planning weddings?
No, I'm
sorry, you're
planning weddings.
Okay. Well, just ride on cue. Don't tell me this, Aisling. You don't put microphones on every table, do you?
No, that's definitely not us. That's the videographers would be using mics more than I would. I don't mic anyone up throughout the whole wedding day.
Okay.
As a wedding content creator, I'm kind of there to sort of blend into the background and get kind of the more candid moments.
So you're not doing 360s.
That's what kind of I do. Not miking up any tables.
You're not doing 360s of the couple in the church or at the ceremony when they're saying I do.
No, definitely not.
Okay, Rebecca, are you relieved?
I am, to be honest. It sounds like Aisling's a different species of social media content creator. Fair play to you, Aisling.
Aisling, what do you do as a content creator for weddings?
So basically, I just kind of capture everything as it's happened. So like your photographer and videographer rely on getting a lot more posed shots and stuff throughout the day. And what I find is that couples who book me, whether it's book me to be the only shooter for their whole day or book me with a photographer or with a photographer and videographer, are kind of looking for all like the small moments of the day and even bits that they might not get to see. So for example, like if they could be off with their photographer and videographer doing a content shoot for an hour, I've seen over an hour sometimes, and during that I could stay with them for a while and then head back to the drinks reception and be able to capture what's happening, what they actually didn't get to see at all from their day as well.
I'm just thinking of a social media content creator at the drinks reception, especially if we're deep into the night. You could be a whole lot of trouble, Aisling.
I think most of the time all the vendors are gone home before anything like that starts happening.
I don't know what you're referring to. But tell me, so your job is to get the kind of crazy, quirky moments. Is that it?
Just kind kind of, yeah, just like the little moments, the kind of in between all the big moments. And like what I'm actually finding is like, as Rebecca said about like it's for the likes, not the matters, like I'm totally for that. And I actually find most of my couples don't like, aren't influencers. I think that's what comes to most people's mind when mm-hmm. you think content creation, you think influencers are posting on social media all the time. But most of my couples have, like, I haven't done a TikTok trend at all in the last month with anyone, or like most people just use Instagram as anyone else would, maybe sharing like a photo or two yeah. every couple of months. But they're just really looking for the candid moment, the candid like moments from the day. As Rebecca said, like so much planning goes into it and so much work goes into it, and the day goes by so fast.
Quickly.
There's so many things
yeah.
that you miss, and I'm there like capturing, taking pictures of your flip-flop baskets that you're putting in the toilets, and taking pictures of your sweet cart, all the stuff that you've spent months and months planning that are going to be gone in a flash, and that the photographer and the videographer are focusing more on the couple. And like, I do get stuff of the couple as well, obviously.
Yeah. But you're right though,
to
because
be able
the photographer,
to get all the extra bits,
will focus on the big elements of the day, and you have freedom then to do that, but focus on the quirky stuff or the smaller stuff that maybe big money is being spent on to make the day special. Is there any way you can convince Rebecca, I wonder, to go with a social media content creator? How quickly during the day, Aisling, would you post stuff on social media from the wedding?
There's actually like no posting. I think this is why people get it kind of mixed up and think that they wouldn't like it. Mm-hmm. It's essentially just like having someone film the entire day on their iPhone, but it's filmed well. Like, I've been doing this for 2 years for full time for weddings, and before that I was doing social media management mm-hmm. for businesses and events and stuff, so I've like lots of experience making videos look very nice that are filmed on an iPhone. But it's just that I think it's completely personal preference. Like, I've had people just have me at their wedding. We've done a couple shoot and we've done a few family photos because they just want to actually get back to the reception. They don't want loads of posed photos. They're just not into it.
I know, but
so that's why they'd go for me.
But hang on, spool back or scroll up there a bit for a second, because an awful lot of people, maybe guests at the wedding, don't want to have their image put up on social media. Are you saying nothing is put up on social media?
No, so with content creators, and with me personally, obviously some people might do it, but with me, I send everything to the couple the day after the wedding, and I ask the couple if they want me to share anything, as in, as a videographer, a photographer, any of your vendors would do. But it's completely up to the couple whatever they post as well. Like, a photographer and videographer can post the exact same stuff that your content creator gets. I don't post content of the wedding on my page at all, unless it's like the couple says it's fine to share clips, obviously, as every business is on social media now. But that's why I think people just get confused. But a content creator essentially is just getting your day captured, getting all the little moments and having all the original footage from the day. So literally, like, you can hear the music being played by the band.
I like
and, like,
it. I mean, there's so
kind
much.
Like the atmosphere and buzz of everything.
If you
but
look at
I
it.
Deliver everything.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think from a social media or a content creator's perspective, and at a wedding with the music and the dresses and the suits and the food, and there is so much content. It's one big massive bash that's been in the planning for an awful long time. Aisling, stay with me. Rebecca, stay with me. Irene, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What is your perspective on all of this, Irene?
Well, I've been listening. I'm in the car here on the way to Cork, and my perspective on it is I've been enjoying the all the information. Mm. But the one thing that I haven't heard mentioned so far is the ceremony. Is this a wedding we're talking about?
Yeah.
Or is it a party and an ease up and a bash?
You're talking about the solemn exchange of vows, not mentioned.
Well, I'm kind of thinking, is that not what a wedding is, essentially?
Mm-hmm. And you think there should be more focus on that spiritual, solemn element? Is that it?
Well, I think it's... I mean, nobody so far has even mentioned the fact that they are getting married.
What? Oh, they I have marrying. I was all about the...
Rebecca.
Yeah, sorry. Just to that point, I have... So I was talking about it not being about getting likes, but about the marriage itself. Like, that's hugely important to me, and I agree with you. I think things have spiraled out of control now, to be honest. Like with Instagram and TikTok, I think it's just changed
the way we think and the decisions that we're making. Like, maybe we don't need champagne towers. Maybe we don't need mini moons. I don't know where that expression even came from. But yeah, things have changed a lot. So I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I often think that, you know, my daughter actually, she plays with a group called D Strings. They do, she plays the cello, she plays with the quartet or whatever. They do a lot of weddings. And, you know, I hear her talking about, you know, they do weddings in big venues and so on. And, you know, I have to agree with her when she says, you know, that a lot of the focus is now on what happens
after the actual ceremony. You have to celebrate as well, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I 100%, absolutely. I mean, it is a great celebration. But, you know, I mean, essentially, this is the day that you are making solemn vows to your other half. And that's the intrinsic part of the whole, that's what the whole thing should be centred around. Obviously, you then celebrate. But the point I'm making is that, you know, in all this conversation so far, I didn't hear any mention about, you know, when you were saying, you know, what plans have you made for your wedding?
I know.
And it seemed to start the wedding.
Can I say this? In fairness to Rebecca, she did go out of her way actually to say that it's all about the marriage being married. But I take your point, Irene. But in this day and age, isn't there a wedding industry? We call it. We don't call it a solemn exchange of vows industry. We call it a wedding industry for good reason.
Absolutely, it is. Yes, and it's there are a lot of people making an awful lot of money out of it, you know. But the other thing that I often think, you know, and I play at some, I'm a musician part-time myself as well, I play at some weddings. I sometimes wonder, you know, when the bride and groom, when they wake up the next day and it's all over, or 2 days later or whatever, when the whole thing is over, like, it must be a huge anti-climax, a huge come down. You know, like, there are girls, I have to say girls probably in particular, who are spending like 12 months of their lives completely wrapped up in the planning for this day or weekend. And then, you know, there's an awful lot of reality to set in when this is all over.
What do you mean by that? What reality?
Well, there are all the bills to be paid. You know, you have your lovely memories, you have your video, you have your, but if you're like, if they're like the rest of us, we're 44 years married, and we take out the wedding album maybe once every 5 years and have a bit of a laugh at it.
Yeah,
you know,
between the arguments. But tell me this. You've mentioned the bills there. By the way, I know some people make a conscious decision. They say, to hell with this. I'm not getting married here. I am going somewhere else. I am eloping, effectively. I'm going to get married overseas and I'll do it there. I'll get married there. But since you mentioned the bills, can I come back to Rebecca? Now, I want everyone to take a deep breath. How much, can you give us a ballpark, Rebecca? How much is an Irish wedding cost in 2025?
So 2025, the average wedding cost currently stands at $34,392, and that's an increase of 3.9% on last year.
You sound like George Lee.
I know, I'm not related to him, by the way.
So over €30,000 for a wedding.
About 35 grand. And do you know what the common challenge amongst my friends, a lot of people these days, is, can you afford a wedding or can you afford a house? And that's a very, very difficult one for a lot of people. And I understand it's painful, the cost.
I just can't get over it. Irene, what do you make of that? 30,000 plus.
Yeah, for a wedding. I think, you know, when you take in, you know, the cost of buying a house these days, you know, and the fact, you know, most people, they end up, you know, up to their necks in debt in a mortgage for the next 40 years of their lives. You know, it's a big chunk out of the deposit on the house.
It is. Having said that, I'd love to be at the wedding. I'd love to be at the wedding that you're spending 30. Any chance of an old invitation, Rebecca, for myself and Aisling and Irene?
Yeah, oh, well, so you never know. I played this in music now for her. She was stuck.
Oh, all right, cool. So I'm a musician and a content creator. Now I'm sorted. Thank you so much.
And I obviously can't do anything. I'll sit there and eat.
You're more than welcome, Cormac.
But the point is, and we're 5 on 551. We're getting so much reaction to this. I think people are shocked. By the way, hold on. I think some people are shocked. Because if you are planning a wedding, certainly I think you've hit a nerve, Rebecca, in terms of the cost rising really quickly. I think people are relating to that. The other thing is the pressure. I think people are saying, yep, she's right in terms of the pressure. Can I just put it to Aisling, though? Is some of the pressure not coming from, and don't be offended by this, Aisling, people like you who are posting ads, get your content creator now.
I think it really depends on the person. I mean, photographers post, get your photographer. Videographers post, get your videographer. Florists are posting to get your florist. At the end of the day, like, each of your wedding vendors is just someone with a business. Mm-hmm. So obviously they have to be posting on social media. That's the way the world is now.
Yeah.
To do that. And I do agree that it is definitely about the marriage itself. I have done weddings where it's been 20 people and I've done weddings where it's been 220 people. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it's about the two people who are actually getting married. But as you said, this is one of the times in your life where you're going to have both your families all together to have a big party and celebrate everything, if that is the way that you want to do your wedding. The people I've done weddings who have 20 people and we go to a registry and then go to a restaurant after, I'm sure are still just as happy mm-hmm. with their content or with their photos and videos the day after the wedding waking up as the people who've gone for the big venues and the big budgets as well. Personal preference.
I think you're dead right.
You can get very easily swayed by social media about anything. You could get swayed to spend $30,000 on a big holiday to the Maldives that has nothing got to do with a wedding.
Well, that's true. And that's a fair point.
Content on social media.
You can organise a wedding or a party as big as you like. Stand aside, everyone, because Liam has just stepped onto the Liveline wedding dance floor. Liam, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, how are you?
Not too bad. It doesn't have to be as big as all of this, you say?
Absolutely not, no. I think it just, your last speaker there mentioned it, although that lady is, I think, involved in the wedding.
Yeah, she's a wedding content creator, Aisling, yeah.
Yeah, the wedding itself, if you look at whether it's in the church or in a registry office, whatever the case may be, that is, you paid, I won't say a standard price, but it's relative. The expense is not all that great, as it were. Mm-hmm. It's when you go to the party, it's the party where the expense comes in. Mm-hmm. So how big a party do the couple want? And here they are starting out in life together, and they're talking about big bucks to go for the party. They have to have the disco afterwards, they have to have the band, everything else. And even before they start out in life, they're borrowing money for a party, and I think it's a lot of pressure being put on young couples as well, and then some of them are really are totally bonkers altogether. Where if you can go, I would say for less than €1,000 for either a church or a registry office, whatever you want to go for,
You couldn't get married for less than €1,000, Liam.
Absolutely.
Do you reckon?
It depends on what, and but then you're going back to Cormac, how big do you want the party?
Yeah.
So then you can have the wedding couple, but then you can have either both families, you can go back to a restaurant or hire a room in a hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's when you go into the party, and that's it. It's the party.
And what do you make, Liam? What do you make of the decision some people make to elope and get married overseas?
That's fair enough then. We're getting the holiday, the honeymoon as well. That's it. Some people have done it. I know people have done it 40 years ago or 45 years ago, and they're still married.
Into the all-in-one deal. I'll tell you one thing, so much reaction to this. 5151 0818 715 815. Liam, thank you. Irene, thank you. The best of luck in Cork.
Okay,
watch out for them in Cork, Irene. Aisling, Mila Buchaslat, and
bye.
Rebecca,
bye.
The very best of luck, and don't take on the pressure. Enjoy the day, Rebecca. Thank you.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Nuair a haon tú ar a mus ar an trein ag siúl nuair de rothar, tá a chion féin á dhéanamh agat chun astaíochtaí iompar na hÉireann a laghdú. Mar lámhchún a ghuit ar de thuras tá níos mó ná 1.6 billiún euro á inéistú am líana in iompar poiblí na tíre. Le níos mó ná milliún caite in aghaidh an lae ar Shiúl Valley agus Rothar Valley. Gibé áit a bhfuil de thriail, tá tábhacht le de thuras. Té chuig gov.ie/yourjourneycounts. Teachtaireacht ó Rialtas na hÉireann.
RTE Radio 1.
CMAT, live in summer 2026. Ireland's biggest new star plays her biggest headline shows yet. St. Anne's Park, Dublin, Saturday, May 30th. And Virgin Media Park, Cork, Saturday, June 20th. Subject to license. CMAT, summer 2026. Tickets available this Thursday.
Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
We have had some big guests on Second Captain Saturday down the years, Murph.
You're Conan O'Brien, you're Sharon Horgan's, you're Brendan Gleeson's.
But what if I told you this weekend we will be speaking to President Michael D. Higgins from Oris on Uachtaráin?
I just wouldn't believe you, on. It's just not possible.
Well, it's happening, buddy. Join us from the Oris Saturday at 1 on RTE Radio 1.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
And that number is extremely powerful, I can tell you, as is 51551, as is Liveline, because you will not believe this. The mystery of the lost photos that I mentioned to you earlier on the programme. We spoke with Maura, who found a set of photos, three of them, I think. She was giving clues to try and find the owner. Three army officers. There was a 1918 on the photos. There was a 1961 on the photos. Roscommon was a clue as well. And she said she found them at the RDS horse show in Simmons Court, near Simmons Court. Would you believe that we have tracked down the owner of the photos and they will be reunited, which I must say I'm absolutely delighted by, because if you saw the photos, they are of extremely important and huge sentimental value to the owner. So well done, Maura, and well done whoever is listening who managed to piece everything together and contact the owner. Now, a couple of days ago on this programme, I had a conversation with Nathan, who I hope is listening, and all the best to you, Nathan, in Donegal, if you are, that stopped me in my tracks when he described how lonely he is. He lives alone. And Philip was listening as well. Philip, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
That conversation resonated with you as well, Philip.
It did. But first of all, I have no disability, and I feel sorry for that man. Like, I can get out and about. Mm-hmm. I live in rural Ireland. I would say from March until October, it's a beautiful place. But after that, forget it.
What part of rural Ireland do you live? Whereabouts?
The southeast. Southeast.
Oh, okay. The sunny southeast, ironically.
Sunny southeast, correct. Mm.
And you live on your own as well, do you?
I do, yes.
Okay. And you say the winter period in Ireland is difficult, especially.
I don't go to the pubs anymore. I don't do dancing or that, and it's just you're restricted to what you can do. Like the weather may dominate everything.
Yeah, it certainly does. All right. And could you go to the pub
at half four in the evening? It's kind of there. You're there and you're on your own till 9 or 10 o'clock the next morning.
Yeah.
Oh, good God, no. I couldn't hack it anymore.
Mm. Why don't you go to the pubs anymore?
Well, it dominated my life for 35 years, that's right. So I'll just keep out of it. Mm.
And how do you spend your days then?
Well, in the summertime, I'd be no problem getting them. Like, I go to the beach, I go walk, I go to the gym, I do bits and things, but it's the wintertime that kills me. Mm.
It can get in on you, Philip, can't it? Like all that time.
Oh, it does be a long shot. It does. Like, you'd be looking up the walls, you'd be talking to yourself, this, that, and the other. But I just couldn't hack it anymore. So I just hop on my bike and I hop over to Spain. That's what I do.
That's your solution. So you don't winter in Ireland anymore, so to speak.
No. And I would, anyone who's in a position to do it, I would recommend to do it. Mm-hmm. Well, the weather is number one, and the cost of living over there is cheaper too.
So you have
a more sorts of life for pensioners over there.
Yeah. So you have a solution, and I'm conscious of the fact that this is not...
Well, it's my solution. That's yeah. Solution for it's my
so,
solution.
So I'm conscious of the fact that this is not an option for everyone to so you
no,
go,
I know it's not.
Where, yeah. You go to Spain every winter, is that it?
Yes. Oh, there are loads of people. There are loads of Irish out there. They don't tell you the one thing. I'll never spend a winter in Ireland again. Never. Too miserable.
So you're telling me you're lonely in winter in Ireland, but you're not lonely in Spain. It's... At the same time.
Spain has changed. It changed my life.
How so?
Well, I have more sorts of activities. Like you, in October, November here, you're dressed, you have a coat on, you have jumpers on, you have the heat and all. I don't have that. I have short trousers, I have short sleeve shirts on me, short shorts on me. Mm-hmm. I can get out cycling, I play bowling, I go walking, I go cycling with some of the lads over there.
You have mates over there?
Yes, and there is proper cycle paths over there. Like, I wish I was going to go over there and look at them. I haven't got them here. Yeah.
No, but I'm saying you have mates in Spain when you go.
Well, I made them. I hadn't. Before I went over, I didn't know one. But like here, I just had friends that had apartments over there. They come over and have a look at it anyway. So I went over and it just progressed from that. Mm. I go to pubs over here, right, but it's not the same thing. Like, I can go for a cup of coffee in the morning or during the day. It's €3 or €4. Well, you're looking here, at 10 or 15 euro here. Mm.
And you find it easier to make friends in Spain than you would here?
I do, yes, because I get out more often.
That's a strange one, isn't it? Because I understand what you mean, I must say. I do wonder, is it the sense that you're freer, you feel almost that you're on holiday? It's expensive though, Philip, isn't it?
It's cost of living, that's way cheaper than here. Well, mine, sure, diesel is only about 125, 130 over there per litre. That's one thing. Mm. My internet is €19 a month. It's €50 here. It's always expensive.
Yeah, but where do you can't stay in a hotel for the whole winter.
Oh, I don't stay in a hotel. I have a usable apartment over there.
Okay.
You can rent an apartment over there for 400 a month if you want.
400 a month? Wow.
If you want it. Mm.
And... So go back for a sec.
Go on.
Yeah.
I have friends over there. Like, one man is on disability, and he's another fellow's marriage broke down. Two friends I keep in touch with on and off, and they said if they were in Ireland to be homeless. And one fellow was like myself. He was fond of the drink. He just got over there and gave it up. He changed his lifestyle completely.
So you found a gang of Irish men over...
I wouldn't say a gang, there's a few of us now.
No, I know.
The clubs are joining me.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say a gang.
But you found a few Irish people who have made
yes,
the same
Irish
decision.
There's Irish and English. There's a good mixture of everything.
Right. And to go back, I was going to ask you to go back for a second and explain to me why it's easier, in your opinion, to make friends in Spain as opposed to here.
Why is it easier? Well, it's the people don't look over there. Like, people over there, like, they're more relaxed over there. If I find they're more relaxed and they're willing to talk to you.
And is it that you're the connection or maybe people knowing your business? Is that it, I wonder?
That could be part of it too. Yeah. Not that I worry about it anyway.
Yeah. No, I understand though. I do understand. Is there less of a drink culture there, Philip?
Interesting. Well, the drink culture, like, if you weren't fond of the drink and you'd over there, you'll get hooked on it very easy. It make matters worse because it's cheap. Compared to here, like.
Yeah.
But I got out of that cycle. Like, it doesn't bother me anymore.
Do you know what's amazing? Do you know what's amazing to me? You were describing a man to me. You were describing a Philip who was lonely and drawn in on himself and dreading the Irish winter and at a loss almost. And then it's almost like you're describing a different man altogether. now that you've made the decision?
Well, I'd go along with most of that anyway.
Would you? Can you imagine what you'd be like if you didn't winter in Spain?
Well, I wouldn't be here to talk to you anyway, sir.
What do you mean?
Well, living in rural area, like you're living on your own. Jesus Christ, I mean, you want to go, even the cows in the field are gone. And that was, and the people, our neighbours are good and all that. But just, it's when the darkness gets in, things, you're on your own. Only the football will be on this step, so you make a few phone calls. Like I wonder, that's only gone, but I feel very sorry for him. Like, I can get out, he can't.
I know.
I don't think I'm alone either.
You're not.
What I've gathered is there's an awful lot in the same situation as me.
The reason I thanked Nathan for describing that loneliness to me, Philip, and I'm doing the same to you, because and I know you're in a slightly different position now, but the reason I thank you is I know you're not alone and feeling lonely in Ireland. And I know it goes across the ages and job status and all that. You're not alone. There's an awful lot of lonely people here based on the reaction that we've got. Is there anything about Ireland that could be changed, I wonder, in your experience, to make it more bearable for people?
Well, I'd say you can't do it, whether it be the weather. The winters here, dog, good God, to my personal experience, anyways, they're horrible. I dread October, November, December. Dread them.
Mm.
Every day is like a night.
Yeah, and it's long. Can I say this to you, Philip?
Go ahead.
Power to you for talking to us and describing your solution. It might not be for everyone, but it works for you.
I know, and everyone's like, yeah. Not even my size shirt won't fit everyone.
Yeah. Well, look, more power to you, as I say, and I hope you continue to enjoy the winters in Spain.
Right.
Make sure you come back to us. Make sure you come back to us after winter in Spain and come back to Ireland. It's fascinating to talk to you, I must say, and you describe it very well. Thanks for joining us, Philip, on the programme. And can I tell...
Okay.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Philip, thank you from the sunny southeast and sunny Spain as well. Can I tell people that if you do feel lonely, as I said to Nathan a couple of days ago on the programme, Alone, and one of our listeners to Liveline called in to say Alone is a superb organisation and there is support available from Alone and their people. And the number is 0818 222 024.